Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, Live Nation prepares venues for the live streaming future. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt, and with me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
As ever, we are going to be taking a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when a whole load of keynotes and speakers were announced for our online conference at the Great Escape this May.
Or otherwise known as next month.
All right, next month. Same thing. Talk about your stuff and then we can get on with talking about important things.
The point is that the Great Escape, the online edition of the Great Escape that is happening this year, is now less than a month away. That's why I'm bringing up the fact that May isn't some far off, distant moment in time that may or may not happen depending on whether or not human civilization gets through the rest of the year. No, we are less than a month away.
There's time. There's time for it all to collapse.
Do you think the end of human civilization is going to be before the 13th of May? Is that what you're predicting?
I think the pubs reopen and then it all collapses. People are still getting into it. Next week, that's when it really kicks off.
I've done a lot of work preparing this online conference. So could we
please... unfortunate, isn't it?
Could the collapse of human civilization come a couple of weeks after?
Maybe it could be the big finale.
I'm happy with that, providing my conference gets to take place. So yes, it's the online edition of The Great Escape. It's happening on the 13th and 14th of May. And we announced a bunch more stuff about the conference in the last week, including three more keynote interviewees who will be appearing in our programme this year, including Ulla Obermann, who is the global head of music at TikTok, Lorna Clark, who is the controller of pop at the BBC. And we've also announced details of the artist in conversation that will be taking place this year. That's actually being presented by PRS, PPL and the PRS Foundation. And Ghost Poet is going to be in conversation. So those are some of the interviewees that we announced this week. We also announced more information about the panel discussions that we will be presenting as part of the CMU TGE program. We talked about this before on Setlist. We're presenting three strands this year: future music talent, future music strategies, and future music world. And we've unveiled some of the topics that we'll be delving into under each of those strands. And you can access all that information on the Great Escape website. In addition to the keynote in conversation interviews and the three CMU TGE strands, there'll also be partner panels being presented by the Great Escape's industry partners. And on top of all of that, we have TGE Elevate returning. That's our educational and professional development program supported by Arts Council England. And there'll be a whole host of webinars available as part of that, including some presented by us here at CMU and also two presented by Centric Music on publishing and sync. So just some of the things that we've announced in the last week. And basically all of this will be happening in a special conference platform that will actually open up a few days before the 13th of May. So if you get yourself a delegate pass, you'll be able to log in. There'll be some online webinars and other content available as soon as you log in. You can also arrange meetings and network with other people attending. And then the live streams will kick off at 10 a.m. on the 13th of May. And of course, it's not just a conference. In the evening, on both the Thursday and the Friday of that week, there'll be a whole host of online showcases with loads of really great artists from all over the world showcasing their talents to you. So although we cannot do all of this on the seafront in Brighton this year, we're still going to have a really good Great Escape experience. And if you go to the Great Escape website, you'll find all the information and you can get your delegate passes booked.
But that is not what we are here to talk about
this week.
No, later on we will be discussing Ofcom's decision not to take action over a Capital Extra DJ taking money in exchange for airplay. But first, Live Nation and live streaming company Veeps have announced that they are kitting out more than 60 US music venues with equipment to offer any artist performing in them the option to also broadcast their show online.
Yeah, so this company, Veeps, set up by the guys from Good Charlotte, If You Remember Good Charlotte. Is that unfairly dismissive to suggest that Good Charlotte might be a band that you would remember, implying that you would remember them from the dim and distant past, rather than them being a very current outfit that everyone should be excited about?
No, I think, they're clearly doing all right for themselves in other ventures, so I don't think it matters if you're disparaging about their musical output. I don't know, are they still a hot topic?
Well, their live streaming company is. So Live Nation actually invested in this company, Veeps, earlier this year. And yeah, the big announcement this last week is that an assortment of venues, I'm assuming Live Nation owned or at least Live Nation managed venues.
Oh yeah, they're not just breaking in.
Well, they could do deals with other people's venues, but Live Nation have got plenty.
Live Nation's got a lot of venues.
They have. So an assortment of venues, 60 in total, owned by Live Nation within the US, of a variety of sizes, so big venues and small venues and everything in between. They're going to fit it out with kit. And yeah, the idea is that when live music starts to resume, whenever that is, I mean, actually, in some parts of the US, they're going a little bit crazy and they're allowing live shows to resume. But as live shows resume, artists will be told, if they perform in these venues, we've got an off-the-shelf solution which would allow you to relatively easily, without any major costs or logistical hassles, to live stream your show while you're performing in this venue. Why don't you do that? Is the offer that is going to be made. And I guess two interesting sides to this. One is that while it's nice that it's going to be logistically easier to live stream shows in these venues as a result of this partnership, all those licensing issues we've talked about previously on set lists still remain. But I guess the other interesting thing is that this is a sign that Live Nation, the biggest live music company in the world, sees a future for live streaming beyond the pandemic.
Yeah, I think throughout this whole last year, one of the big questions a big question that people have been asking is, will all this online entertainment continue once people are able to get back into venues and theatres and other places where live music and entertainment happen? And I mean, from a personal point of view, I'm hoping that yes, they will, because I'm not able to get out as much as I used to. And it's been quite nice to be able to watch things live in, obviously not, it's not the same as being in a venue, but when you can't get to venues, which many people can't for whatever reason, then being able to see something at all is good. And obviously the other thing is that, I assume this is what Live Nation have realised, is that if there are all these people out there who would like to go to shows but can't, you can sell more tickets if you can sell tickets for places at the show that aren't in the physical venue. So there are going to be benefits for both music fans and music companies there, assuming that this can be kept going in a way that people like in the future.
Yeah, because of course, as we've talked about before on the podcast, it's not like live streaming, the streaming of live shows, of concerts, of gigs. It's not like that is new. I mean, the technology has been around for, 20 years now? I mean, the first platforms of this kind that I was pitched, I mean, we are talking about the late 90s. It then took a few years for anybody to have a decent enough internet connection to be able to actually watch a live streamed show. But despite the fact the technology has been there for quite some time, with a few exceptions, Boiler Room, I guess, in particular, and then there have been some live streams, particularly from festivals, haven't there, on YouTube and other platforms. But yeah, it's only really in the last year since lockdown forced all the venues and festivals to close that, I suppose, two things, which is A, we've started to see the industry taking live streaming more seriously, and possibly, I think, on the live side of the industry, there used to be a little bit of a divided opinion between those people who actually thought that if you make live streams available of shows, it could have a negative impact on ticket sales for the actual show, versus those who were never really of that opinion, but just possibly weren't convinced that enough people were interested in live streams to go to the effort. But it does feel like an increasing number of people in the live sector now, A, think that there is a long-term opportunity here, that because people have got used to watching live stream shows during lockdown, that a decent number of those people, like yourself, will want to continue doing that once lockdown is over. And then those people who used to be of the opinion, but could this have a negative impact on our ticket sales for the actual show, I think I sense that those concerns are not as significant as they once were.
I mean, there's lots of other considerations, like in the more global world that we're in because of the internet, people are fans of music from, you know, that's not made by bands who live down the road. And often a band on the other side of the planet can build up a fan base somewhere, but it's not really cost effective for them to actually go and play in that country to those fans. It might not be a big enough fan base to make it worth their while, or they might have commitments in their home country that they can't neglect. Maybe they've just got a bigger audience. Maybe they have to do more to keep themselves going there. And touring the world does take you out of action in many other places, like your home country, for quite a long period of time. So if you're able to live stream shows to people without having to actually physically go to them, then that's a benefit. I mean, the only thing I would say was a slightly negative point on Live Nation kitting out their venues with live streaming equipment is that the live streams I've enjoyed over the last year are the ones that have been designed as a different type of show, like not just a band standing on a stage. So like the Billie Eilish live stream was amazing because that was designed as its own thing and used technology to kind of build her into this 3D world. And it was a really amazing thing that you couldn't do in a venue. And then there was the Dua Lipa one, which was in a venue, but it was print work, so a nightclub, and it used all the different areas of that club to turn it into a show with different sections to it in different parts. And I'm less interested in seeing just a band standing on a stage playing their songs. And perhaps, I mean, maybe that feeds into something you said there, which is like, maybe, you know, that there would be concerns that putting tickets on sales for live stream would stop people coming to the venues. But actually, given the choice for that sort of show, I would much rather be in the room than sitting at home watching it.
Yeah, so I suppose it'd be interesting in terms of the artists who might utilise this kit being put into these venues by Veeps is how many would literally just be live streaming the show that they're delivering live, and how many might actually book the venue on another night and not actually sell tickets or not too many tickets for the show, maybe just have a VIP audience and then do a different show that is skewed towards the streaming experience. I mean, it couldn't be as ambitious as those two shows that you just mentioned,
no.
But maybe there could be a happy medium because those were expensive shows for those yes. artists to produce. But maybe there is a happy medium that, yeah, it isn't that you would just live stream the show you were doing anyway, but maybe you have an extra day in one of the cities on your tour and then you use the kit that's already been set up to do a show that's designed to be live streamed, but you're keeping your costs down by using a venue and the kit that's already in the venue. I don't know. Or maybe the Veeps guys are just anticipating people live streaming every single show they do in these venues and not really considering all the stuff you've just said about whether or not that does work as a proposition. Also, I mean, the other thing that I know some agents I've spoken to about this have said is, yes, there's a long-term opportunity for live streaming, but that doesn't mean that there's an appetite for every single show to be live streamed. And some agents I've spoken to say that they see the future being that a live stream show is the final date on the tour.
Yeah.
So it's not that you're live streaming every show. It's just that at the end of every tour, you do a live stream version, which maybe reimagines what you were doing on stage. And almost then you get a double whammy that you can sell tickets to that to all the people who, for whatever reason, couldn't see the show live. But also you can then try and sell tickets to the people who did come to the live show, who have a slightly nostalgic feeling about the night that they had, and they can relive it in a slightly different way. So I guess that would mean that if that is the future, it could still be beneficial that you're reducing the cost by having all this kit in these venues, but it's unlikely the kit's going to be being used every single night of the year.
No, I think what Live Nation and Veeps said in this announcement was that they would give the option for artists to use that kit rather than it being a thing that they expected them to do. And you're probably right that it's more likely that rather than bands touring a load of Live Nation venues and broadcasting the show online every night, that they just pick one night to broadcast. It might actually be more like the band, when they play their hometown show, they'll pick their nearest venue that has the necessary kit in it and they'll go and broadcast that show. And then, you know, obviously for a lot of bands, the most excited audience is going to be their hometown audience. And so they know it's going to be a show that's going to look good on camera. And you're not going to be standing on stage with a half empty venue of bored looking people who don't know who you are. It's going to be a packed room of excited people who are going to make people wish that rather than being at home, they were there in the room with you. So next time you go on tour, they'll buy a ticket to see you as well. And everyone's a winner.
Although, as I already mentioned, although it's great that Live Nation and Veeps are going to make it logistically easier to do live stream shows, albeit from a venue stage rather than a really exciting, quirky live stream show, but they're removing some of the logistical barriers, there are still those licensing barriers. The music industry is still kind of working out how it should license these shows, because obviously songs are being performed in these shows, recordings are being made in these shows. And so then you get the questions of, well, how are the songwriters and the publishers being paid because there are performances of their songs happening? Do labels get a stake in this because artists who are in contract with labels are creating recordings? And as we've discussed before, the way live music is licensed when it comes to royalties and the song copyright, etc., and the way streaming services are licensed is very different. Streaming is generally more complicated and more expensive, and the general consensus from the music publishing sector is that it's more like streaming than it is a live show, which therefore means that it's not going to be as cheap as licensing a live show when songs get performed. It's going to be more complicated. And one of the reasons why this is still a debate, even though we're a year on from when live streaming started to gain momentum, when the lockdowns first enforced, is aside from there still being an argument over what percentage of ticket money from a live stream show should go to the music rights, there's also some debate about, you know, quite what role labels could or should have in these shows. There's also the issue of the fact that live stream shows tend to be global, and Spotify-style streaming has had issues around getting licenses that are truly global, and the fact that sometimes you have to do lots of licenses in different territories in order to get the same songs covered, etc., etc. And there's still a big debate about, for example, here in the UK, PRS in partnership with MCPS, so PRS representing the performing rights in songs, MCPS, the publisher's mechanical rights in songs, is hoping to offer a one-stop shop global license for live streams, but there is still some debate about whether or not they can even do that. And I watched one panel discussion about how we could and should license live streams recently with some people from America and Canada and elsewhere. And their conclusion was, oh, well, clearly these live streams, they'll have to get a separate license from every collecting society in every country where somebody buys the ticket. So that's potentially 150 licenses per show, which clearly isn't going to work. They all seem very resolved that that was just what was going to happen.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Have to happen. Although I do sort of feel that given all of these complexities, it might end up being that the platforms will have to do the licensing, not the promoters of the show, because the promoters will never be able to navigate all of these complexities. Whereas a platform could. I know YouTube have ambitions in this space, in the ticketed live streaming space. So if YouTube can sort out the licenses and become the platform where, as a promoter, as an artist, you don't have to worry about any of that stuff, well, they would have a massive competitive advantage. So whether or not Live Nation and Veeps or thinking about any of this behind the scenes, we don't know. They have the edge on the logistical technology, but do they have the edge on sorting out the licensing nightmare? Don't know.
No, but I mean, I suspect that it will get sorted when it's a pressing matter. So I suspect it'll end up getting sorted out somehow or another. I suspect the answer won't be that promoters have to get 150 licenses for every show. But to end on a positive, one thing that Live Nation did say was that with all this extra kit in the venue, you're going to need more crew in there too. And after a year when live crews are one of, if not the worst hit groups of people in the music industry by the pandemic, an opportunity for more work coming out of it is got to be a positive thing.
Yeah, so let's just hope that whatever the licensing solution is, getting those licenses is not so expensive, there's no money left to pay those extra crew members.
I said I was ending on a positive.
There are no positives in this world in which we live. Anyway, that's exciting, isn't it? Live streaming is the future. Hurrah. There you go. I pulled it back.
And finally this week, UK media regulator Ofcom has announced that it will not take action against radio station Capital Extra after one of its presenters, DJ Tiny, asked for payments from artists in exchange for airplay. In its ruling, Ofcom said that while Tiny's actions were a clear breach of its rules, Capital Extra's response had been swift and firm enough to avoid further action. I mean, that further action could have been the station being fined or ultimately losing its licence, so this is a good outcome for Capital Extra. Ofcom said that it recognises that broadcasters can only minimise the risk of an employee or agent forming with a third party a commercial arrangement that may influence the selection or rotation of music for broadcast.
Yeah, so this is a good old-fashioned payola story coming up in the modern music industry. So the allegations that Tiny was charging artists to get airplay on his show on Capital Extra, that all came to light earlier this year when the producer Jay Beats posted on Twitter a screen grab of an email that Tiny had sent him saying, "I'll play your record on my show if you give us some money."
Yeah, it was, "I'll premiere your record on my show and then put it on the playlist for 2 weeks, and all you have to give me is £200.
Now, as most of our listeners, but it seems not DJ Tiny, know, is that when you have a radio show, you're not allowed to take payment for playing records, and that is called payola. And I mean, back in the day, particularly in the US, payola was a big scandal. I say back in the day. I mean, yes, back in the day, but then it did come back up again in the 2000s, didn't it? And whereas in the good old-fashioned days, it was record companies sending their promotions people into radio stations with lots of cash in brown envelopes, by the early 2000s, it was more that they would send DJs big televisions or send them on nice trips to Miami with a sort of a, you know, "We're going to give you some nice stuff. You will playlist on music, won't you?" But payola is very much against broadcasting rules. And here in the UK, yeah, obviously, if you're running a radio station that's going out on the AM, FM or DAB frequencies, you need a license from Ofcom in order to broadcast. That license comes with a whole load of rules that if you break those rules, you can use the license. And getting paid for airplay is very much against those rules. Although interesting that Ofcom was basically saying, but if you are Capital Extra or Global, the owner of Capital Extra, well, they sacked him, didn't they, as soon as this came to light. And I guess what they were saying is, as a broadcaster, what more can Ofcom expect you to do other than to tell DJs they can't do this, stick it in the DJ's contract, and then if they do it, sack them. That's pretty much all a radio company can do. So although this DJ very much broke the rules, Global kind of got off.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if they'd just given him a slap on the wrist and tried to cover it up, then that would have been a different matter. But obviously, this was out on the internet already. That was where the accusation started. So they couldn't really cover it up. But they did act very swiftly. Quite soon after this tweet came out, they not only sacked DJ Tiny, but they removed him from their website entirely, like scratched any trace of him from their history. And they said in their submission to Ofcom that they'd confronted him behind closed doors and he'd admitted it, so they'd immediately terminated his contract, kicked him out the door. They didn't actually say anything about it. They just quietly scrubbed him from their website. It was him who put out a statement saying that he realised what he'd done was wrong, that he'd been given a great opportunity and he'd messed it up. And he said he was willing to accept all the consequences of whatever came at him. Although Global did say as well in its submission that they'd invited him to also submit evidence to Ofcom, that he'd kind of stepped back and had nothing more to do with it from that point. I mean, in terms of what Ofcom can do, it's only Capital Extra and Global who would receive punishment for it. So he'd already had his consequences at this point by being sacked and being publicly embarrassed. There wasn't really much more that could happen to him. I mean, you said at the beginning there that he was one of the few people who didn't realise that that was against the rules. Another thing that Ofcom said was that he'd received training during his time at Capital Extra about his obligations as a presenter and very specifically not accepting money in exchange for airplay.
Yeah, so that suggests that he wasn't paying that much attention during his training in terms of the very important rules you have to obey.
I mean, that's a biggie. I'd imagine they pressed that point quite hard.
Although I guess we are in an age where online, with creators on YouTube and Instagram and TikTok. Getting paid to plug things is basically how the business works now, isn't it? And I mean, technically there are rules sometimes in law, sometimes the platforms have their own rules about how transparent you have to be when you have been paid to, for product placement or endorsement or whatever. But I guess, you know, he is active in a culture where people being paid to plug stuff has become so much the norm that maybe he dozed off for a couple of minutes during his briefing when he joined Capital Extra. And he was like, well, if I was on TikTok, I could plug stuff in return for payment. Why not on the radio too?
Yes, I suppose there's that. I mean, maybe, well, if you're plugging stuff on like Instagram or whatever, you're supposed to make it clear that it is an advert, aren't you? But I suppose, I mean, we have our own CMU playlists on Spotify. And although those are playlists rounding up music that we've covered in CMU, I regularly get emails kind of pitching stuff saying, how much would you charge to get onto your playlist? It's like, well, I don't respond to that. But I mean, that's quite a regular occurrence. I mean, quite often people kind of just do blanket emails to things. And so people ask me to pay them money to plug my music. The number of people who think that CMU is a band is very confusing. But I mean, that sort of email does come in quite frequently as well. There are a lot of people out there trying to make or hand over money in order to get music playlisted. So maybe, yeah, that's just sort of where he was coming from. Like, everyone pays to get music played, don't they?
And maybe he thinks, you know, the average young music fan constantly being plugged stuff through YouTube and Instagram and TikTok videos that they watch, maybe they don't care. I watch a lot of YouTube videos these days, and I am getting very au fait with the services provided by Skillshare, NordVPN, Audible. Who else is it? Who? I don't know. All the YouTubers whose content I watch. I mean, you are right. In the main, they are really obvious when they're plugging, and actually you're meant to have the little pay promotion thing as well. But, you know, having product placement and endorsement, I mean, okay, yes, maybe playing a record on a radio show where you're not declaring you're being paid for it, maybe we could say there's a big line you're crossing there. But there is so much paid placement of stuff going on these days. Do you know, every time I see one of these product placements, endorsement things on a YouTube video, it always occurs to me, because podcasters do it as well, don't they? You get the podcaster doing the little sort of product placement plug early on in the podcast or at some point during the podcast. And I've often thought, we should do that. We should have advertorial on set list. But for one reason and one reason alone. Because what always interests me when I watch YouTube videos or listen to podcasts with the product placement is how successful the YouTuber or podcaster manages to deliver what is, well, usually they're clearly told that they don't have to follow a script, so they should do it in their own voice. But then there's clearly a bullet point list of what they've got to cover. And it always interests me how they try to get it in a way that doesn't seem completely horrible. But I just thought it'd be quite funny if we had product placement on set lists, that I could get a script from the advertiser, give you the script, and then we could all see how many words into the script you could get without sounding sarcastic. I mean, that would be an interesting test. Every week we could have a different company advertising and we could all place our bets. How many words can Andy get into the script without sounding like he's taking the piss? Whichever company has given us some money that week.
I don't think I could do
it. You think 4 words. Well, if anybody is listening and they would like to put this to the test,
if you want
to
try,
you can give us some money, send us a script, and we'll see how far into the script Andy can get without sounding sarcastic. Because the good news is we can do whatever we like on a podcast. We're not bound by the rule givers at Ofcom. But I should stress, if either of us ever get a show on Capital Extra, and I'm sure we're on the target list for Capital Extra, if we ever get a show on Capital Extra, we will not take money for playing tracks, because we know that's wrong.
Yes, so please do get in touch if you are listening and you run Capital Extra. We'll happily come and do a show in place of DJ Tiny. I assume they've replaced him already now, haven't they?
You'd think so, wouldn't you?
It's been a while. But yeah, the big news of the week is Ofcom aren't going to do anything. It's always a good story when the big news is nothing is going to happen.
Nothing is going to happen. Although, if you're global, that is actually quite big news.
Yes, I suppose not having one of your stations taken off the air is quite good news for them.
But even though what you're basically saying is we've just spent the last X minutes talking about a total non-story, it's always fun to have a little bit of payola chatter on the podcast.
Yes, but that is all we've got time for on this edition of Setlist. Do all the podcast stuff now that you do after every episode of a podcast that you listen to. Unsubscribe from it and then subscribe again. Rate it and review it. And also send it to all of your friends via whatever communication platform you have at your disposal. And also, why not email us? setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk about, I don't know, anything. Anything at all. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Moulton, Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.